and I was going to switch the radios and run it through an amp and then out to the antenna. But after admiring the setup that Paul did at the Fairlawn, and it turns out that WB2GAI handed me this nice, really thick aluminum plate, I suddenly got a brainstorm that maybe it might be better to do it that way instead of having switches. And this way you can just look at the plate and say, oh, there's no radios hooked up. Or, oh, maybe I should hook up a radio.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. As one who's made a switching matrix that was really, really complicated, but really, really effective, and was very satisfied with it for about 5 years, until I changed the radio configuration such that it was inconsistent with that requirement, I'm thinking now to go that route myself. The issue I have is that I come in with all the coaxes, and the grounding bus is on the wall on one end of the room, and with all the lightning arresters mounted on the inside, just on the inside, on a metal plate like you described. So what I need to do is I need to have fairly uniform lengths of coax of various sizes coming over to a secondary patch plate near where the radios are, you know, 15 feet away, probably almost 20 feet of cable run, because I want to come down the wall so I can reach it. So yeah, that's actually a pretty good idea to do. I would recommend that, absolutely. But I would make sure that unless that patch panel is got your lightning arresters built into it, that you have the ingress ports in the house all have lightning arresters right at the bulkhead of the house. You don't want to be doing that patch panel thing in the middle of a room somewhere with that being your only ground point.
Well, that's the problem. What I was planning to do is I have this beautiful Teflon egress point through the window, and on the outside we're putting a sheet of aluminum, and we're putting all those bulkhead through connectors in it, and so they're coming in. And at that point, I have some really nice gas discharge lightning arresters. I have a few of the name brand. I got a couple that are valid for the UHF and VHF, and about three or four for lower bands. And so that's what I was planning to do right as it came in the house, so that if it was going to go anyplace, hopefully it would go to the three or four ground wires that I put in outside that egress point or ingress point, whatever you want to call it. So hopefully it would not come into the house, you know, uninvited guests, so to speak. So that was one of my questions.
That sounds pretty good. I wouldn't just hope that it's a thin sheet of aluminum that you're backing that Teflon up with, but something that can, you know, offer a really good solid bonding point mechanically and electrically. So you want to make sure that that's going right into the ground with one or two ground rods below that ingress point. Anyway, so that's something to think about as well. I know another ham locally who's got a 4-foot ground rod underneath his window, and I have to explain to him that we need to augment that if we're going to make sure that nothing comes in and bites him one day. Anyway, so anything else on this topic?
Nah, I got to find a different topic.
All right, go ahead, Noel.
Okay. One antenna I intend to put up was a loop, approximately 75 meters. Might be a few short by a few feet, but I figured I could tune it. I have a tuner that's one of the MF Mighty Fine Junk ones that allegedly will handle 2 kW. I figure since they exaggerate, it might handle my 600 watts. So I can see that on as a balance tuner. The balance tuner only has two controls, because one controls the inductor, one controls the two capacitors, which are interlinked. If one gets more capacitance, the other one gets less. So I'm fine using it as a loop. However, I understand that if you want to use it on 160 meters in the wintertime, you really have to work it against ground, and there's got to be some kind of switching arrangement. So I'm thinking about these little knife switches, which actually KO2OK sold me. Nice, heavy brass, about the same spacing as the 450 ohm ladder line. The question is, do I have to keep them right at the window in the back? Because I kind of would have trouble reaching them. Would it be a real major faux pas if I brought these to the front and had, say, 2 feet of live antenna, basically, feeding out through the shack and out to the outside, as opposed to having it just start right there at the outside window? Would that really make much of a difference? Thanks, Annette. This is Antulio.
So I'm having trouble figuring out, where do you want to put these, since you don't want to put them near the window?
Okay. The window is in the corner of the ham shack. The tuner is on the shelf directly in front of the window. However, if I put the switch on the window, I have to reach across 18 inches of shelf, which sometimes is a little bit difficult, especially if I'm in the wheelchair when they're going to replace my knees and hips in a year or two. So the question is, if I brought those switches out away from the window, and it's about an 18-inch straight out, put them someplace where I can easily reach them. That means before I'd have the antenna lead going away from the window approximately 3 or 4 feet before it starts going up, for the old ladder line. Now, if I'm converting it so it's basically shorted together and fed as a vertical, and I, instead of having that start right at the window where it goes out, having to start an extra 18 or 20 inches inside the shack, will that make any difference, much difference, as far as the RF amount in the, that would be in the shack?
Okay, I wouldn't, when you bring a piece of line 18 inches into the shack, you're going to have to ground that line. So you're going to have to bring it 18 inches in and then 18 inches back to ground that. And lightning doesn't like to take right angles. It's going to want to, it's not a good thing. I mean, no ifs, ands, or buts. So I think you're going to need to find a way to get closer to that window physically and not block it with a shelf. I think that's the key point here. Same thing with your bulkhead connectors. Those bulkhead connectors need to be droppable at the point of ingress.
It should be what at the point of ingress? Droppable?
Not in use.
What's droppable?
What's droppable? The lines going from the bulkhead connector to the radios or to the tuners or whatever you've got in your shack, you want to make sure all those wires don't bring any stray electricity in through that bulkhead if you want to avoid it. Otherwise, it's going to dance all over your ham shack and break things.
You do realize that if you're in a wheelchair, that's going to be very difficult to do.
Yeah, do you realize that whether or not you're in a wheelchair, the lightning doesn't care? So we got to find a way to get you closer to the window and not have to worry about that shelf. I think the issue is not the wheelchair. The issue is the shelf that's preventing the person in the wheelchair from doing what needs to be done. Go ahead.
Is it possible to build a little, you have a tuner on the shelf, can you imagine? Make a shelf that sits, that the tuner will sit on, raising the tuner, let's say, about 6 inches above the shelf. That way you could reach under the shelf, could you do it that way to get at your switches?
The shelves are variable in height. They go from the floor to the ceiling. And right now I'm looking over there. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 shelves. So they can be put at any height, basically in about 6-inch increments.
Okay, so the question is, can you raise it up so that you can get access to the bulkhead connectors underneath there? Now, can you mount the switches below the tuner, along with the bulkhead connectors below the tuner, so that way you can get easy access to it from your wheelchair?
Yeah, I guess you could. Either that or use some kind of remote switching arrangement. Of course, I'd have to move things around. I was thinking that perhaps the linear power supply shouldn't be sitting right there either. Things should move around a little bit.
Yeah, get that thing out of there. I mean, when I have lightning situations that I'm worried about, there are a couple of things I do. Number one is that I take every wire that goes in and out of my radio or in and out of my computers, and I disconnect them. Every wire. Except for the bonded ground to the chassis. I leave that. And I probably, in some cases, shouldn't even do that, but that's neither here nor there. But as long as everybody has a common ground, that's not a big problem. Number two, I need to remind myself to unscrew the cables to come in the ground bus, you know, where the lightning arresters are, where the feeds come in the house. I need to drop those 20-foot jumpers, and they're random. They're not all 20-footers. They're all over the place. That's the piece of clutter I want to fix. But when I do fix those in-house jumpers and create a new patch panel, like you were describing at the beginning of this, near the operating position, because I have a similar problem you do, and that is where cables come in and where the operating position are not the same. I want to do one more thing, and that is I want to create a dummy plug, so I'm going to get a bunch of N connectors, a bunch of PL259s that are shorted, so that when I pull the cable out, I'm actually going to short out on the back of the lightning arrestor the cable that's coming from the outside.
That'll never happen. There's no way I'm going to unscrew 10 when I stop operating.
I'm sorry, say again?
I know better than to attempt the impossible, and there's no way I'm going to reach over there and unscrew several PL259s or type in the window.
Yeah, well, here you probably can get away with it most of the time, although Jim Joyce will probably, at minimum, will tell you some horror stories on that, of his own making, I'm sure. But, you know, I lived in Shreveport, Louisiana once, and I watched sparks fly off of my receive-only NSAID wires. I had a bunch of different ones, and as well as dipoles, and I would watch sparks fly onto the chassis of my grounded receiver. I laid a cable that was spare antenna with a PL259 on top of a National NC33 that was grounded. And NC33 was nothing special in the way of a radio, other than sentimental. And I literally watched lightning punch a hole in the top lid off the center lead. It put a dent in, it didn't punch a hole through, but it put a dent in the center of the top lid of my NC33 from a nearby lightning strike.
I hope you had the ARO insurance.
This was before I was a ham, and it was 1970, so no.
Mr. Pick?
Yes, sir.
Lightning will go wherever it wants, regardless of what you do to try to keep it from doing something different. The only thing that you can hope to do is encourage it to go somewhere else, where it won't do quite so much damage. But I'm not sure I say none of us have enough money to prevent a direct or even... Well, certainly we don't have enough money to prevent a direct strike from doing significant damage. But hopefully with a near strike, you can mostly eliminate any damage. Certainly far from 100%.
I'm down in the valley between two ridges underneath trees.
Lightning will go wherever it wants.
That's true, and that's why I was thinking about these shorted connector caps for the bulkhead. As Jim says, anything I can do to encourage it to go somewhere else is a good thing. If nothing else, even for the antennas that have insulated, you know, driven elements, it will ensure that as it hits the house, not only the one side will hit ground, but both sides of that cable will hit ground. If I create a shorting cap on the inside of the lightning arrestor, because I'll have basically directly wired. In fact, they will have the odd effect of potentially protecting my lightning arrestors when I'm not using them. Isn't that ironic? Next question.
That's it for today.
Well, that was a really good colloquy. I like that. You did good. We had some really good subjects tonight. Is there anybody else with more?
W2JEK.
Dandy Don.
Hey, you talk about these lightning arrestors, when these things operate, will you know that they have operated? Or will they short out and stay shorted out so that you will know that your lightning protection has been used, so to speak, and is not going to be functioning again?
Now, I don't know how we test those. I use the... Jim, you can help me as to which one I might have. The little angular, well, little cube-looking things that with a feed-through, and they actually have a, you can buy, they have an optional, but certain models have like an L bracket bolted to them when you buy them.
Polyphaser?
Thank you. That was the word I couldn't remember. Polyphaser. Thank you. I have a couple of different models of polyphasers, and they all have removable plugs. So I don't know how to test them. So you raised a good question, Don. How does one test a polyphaser to find out if it's fried?
Some voltage on it. You still didn't answer the question that Noel asked.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Well, you started talking about lightning. He didn't ask about lightning. He asked what's going to happen with that antenna when he tries to use it on 160.
Sorry, with all the activity here, I misunderstood. I'll let you answer it then.
Noel, you're going to end feed a wire. Is that what you want to do? The real way to do that is open it up at the antenna. In other words, you're going to just feed it as a loop and bring it all back down and short it down at the bottom?
I was going to tie the two ends of the 450-ohm wire together and feed the loop as a capacity-loaded vertical. Capacity hat-loaded vertical. And the answer to Gordon's other question was, you give it to Tony, he hypothesizes 3,000 volts, and if it doesn't break down, it probably is still good.
I'm sorry, Noel, there's all sorts of activity here. I missed that last little bit.
question is, how do you test a folly phaser or other solid-state lightning protector device? Well, they usually fail shorted. They don't usually fail open. Besides, if they fail open, there's still a nice spark up there. So what you do is you give it to Tony. He high pots it to 3,000 volts. If it doesn't fail, it's probably okay, as long as it has a constant resistance of a few megohms, so that your antenna static discharge goes away.
Okay, but you're not going to... You do that for him to test when you just want to run a periodic test to see if they're working, or do you do that after you they seem to be shorted and you want to free it up somehow?
Well, I bought one at a ham fest, and I got a couple of, from Paul at Fairlawn, and so Tony tests in his high pot, because Jim Joyce suggests that we do that, make sure that they weren't shorted at any reasonable voltage that we would be using as a transmitter, because the experts told us they mostly fail shorted. They very rarely fail open. So the question came is, how do you test it? Well, you give it to Tony and let him test it.
Do you give him the whole thing, or you just give him the plug?
I gave him the whole thing.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the way I've got mine set up on a piece of Bengal aluminum, and I have three self-tapping screws that I use to bolt that aluminum bus angle that they're all mounted to the main aluminum plate. I have one on each end. It's like a foot or so long. And so all of the connectors, I mean, all the lightning arresters on a given row are bussed together. So what happens is this. When you unscrew the three screws, and then, let's say, eight or nine, depending on which row it is, connectors on a bus bar just fall off the wall. And then what you do is you, what it costs, if you want to remove one or more from that bus bar, then what you do is you just, unscrew its set screw from that, and you're good to go. The police are looking with a spotlight at my neighbor's house down the street here. I wonder what that's about. Anyway, I just got home. I should probably find that out. Someone take over there for a second. W2TTT.
Comment?
Go ahead, Rachel. This is W2JEK. I'll just pick it up and read their comment. Over.
K2BAR, AJ4WD. We keep talking aluminum. Aluminum is great, but it does oxidize very quickly. You have lots of issues. Why not just go with a piece of copper pipe? If you're concerned about having something flat, then just flatten the piece of copper pipe out. There's also copper bar strips that you can purchase in the electrical supply area. They are commonly used as the ground strips in one of your electrical panels. There's a lot of other alternatives that you have that could be better than aluminum. Likewise, if you are having some current being drawn through there to ground, that area is going to heat up, and you're going to start to get some soft connections. The screws will actually work themselves out. So just be mindful of those types of issues also when you're looking at a grounding system. Copper is, I think, a better alternative, and you do have some choices there. Back to Ned.
William.
Rachel, this is W2JEK, Acting Net Control. I have heard that two pieces of aluminum will have a dielectric reaction to each other because they're different types of aluminum. have two dissimilar metals, you do have that kind of electrolysis problem that occur. One thing that for you, Noel, is if you want to convert your antenna from a balanced line to a what you might call a random wire, so to speak, and that random wire being lateral line and the loop on the end of it to becoming 160 meter antenna. I think a double pull, double throw knife switch would do the trick. One side of the knife switch would be connecting the one side of your tuner would always be connected to the one wire of your lateral line. Let's say the A side of the lateral line. The B side of the lateral line is connected to a normal knife switch contact, different knife, which is not the normal knife switch contact. And when the knife switch is open, or tuner, B side of the tuner is connected to ground. At the same point in time, the A side of your lateral line is connected to the B side of the line by the other make contact on the knife switch. I don't know if I quite understand what I'm saying, but that's what has to be. So now you have the lateral line is shorted together. It's connected to the one terminal on your, say, terminal A on the terminal B on the tuner. It's no longer connected to the knife switch, but it's instead connected to the ground system. Over to you, Noel. This is W2JK.
Well, that's what I was thinking. That's why I bought this really nice, heavy gauge double pole, double throw switch from Bennett at one of the flea markets. As to Rachel's comment, the aluminum sheet on the outside is just if lightning decides to take a shortcut. It's more attractive to jump that very small gap. Doesn't matter what the resistance is. Doesn't matter if it's connected, because if the lightning hits, it's going to have so much voltage, it doesn't care. I'm going to use a little Permatex and with the silicone solvent and the little zinc particles anyways and seal it, but I don't think it matters. As far as on the inside, on the lightning resistors themselves, they each have a grounding bolt, and I have 25 feet of this flat braid that has a grommet every, I think, 6 inches, 4 inches, whatever. And so the idea is you run it over to whatever device you want to ground, run the screw through the grommet, and it was designed as a ground strap. So that's what I was intending to use as the actual ground per se for the lightning arresters. The sheet of aluminum on the outside is like icing on a cake. I figure if lightning comes in and it has a choice of zapping inside or to hear this nice sheet of aluminum and it's grounded by three or four. In fact, on a couple of them, I tend to use pieces of old RG 8X or RG 8 coax. You know, what the heck? Soldered the inside and the outside together and ground it with a nice big heavy strap. The only reason I solder it is to keep it from corroding. And covered this whole thing with goop. And I figured I'd have a reasonable ground system. If lightning hits, well, the aluminum will vaporize because the sheet that I have is not that thick. It can't be more than 16 gauge. But the idea is, again, that I was trying to keep the lightning outside rather than invite it inside.
Yeah, this is W2JEK acting net control. Anybody have any comments? Over. W2JEK acting net control. Yeah, well, like, you do that with the lightning inside your house, but anything you can do to keep it outside is and I think one thing, though, one thought I had you mentioning you having several antennas hooking into your radio system, and if they all terminated, if you could, like, say, terminate them into a four-position switch or a five- or six-position switch, and then you only have to take off one end connector that's connecting radio. That might get into some of your problems there. You do have to disconnect the radio from the antenna system. So just taking one SO239 off is a lot better than trying to deal with the five or six of them. That's a thought on your station design. And over to you. This is W2JK.
That sounds good. And did you know Radio Shack sells PL-259s with no treads on it, and the sides are split. They're for the CB operators that are too lazy to screw the PL-259. I don't know what it would do to the threads on the bulkhead connector. But it's a thought. I actually was thinking of putting one of those on the MFJ-259 antenna tester, so I could really quickly put it on and off.
Yeah, for something like that, and for an antenna tester, we wouldn't be using it too much. I guess that wouldn't be too bad. But a lot of other possibilities, or in some cases, if you're using lower power, a BNC connector might be more convenient, too. They're running kind of power. I don't think that's too clear. The main thing is to keep the light away from your expensive radio. I guess it's the wires out there, they're going to be picking up lightning, or not our lightning, but the impulses from a nearby discharge, which just as bad. What's the importance back? W2TTT, W2JK, acting that control. Are you back yet, Gordon?
Then I have to check out and feed the fish. It's late. Thank you, William.
That's good data. Acting that control. Does anybody else have any questions or comments for the net at this time? Over.
Wait, am I? We just some information?
Go ahead, Tommy.
Just in the amateur radio, I guess, related, but somebody informed me to check out a website that is new to me, and maybe some of you guys might be familiar with it all, but if you type in SpaceX.com, there's a company called SpaceX who is developing capsules that can be launched with missiles to geomagnetic, whatever they call it, low orbit. And their eventual object is to deliver heavy loads to the spacecraft. The company is being financed by a millionaire who originally started PayPal, and he donated $100 million to this project and formed a company called SpaceX. So it's really interesting. Type in SpaceX and see some information available. It really is interesting. SpaceX.com.
Okay. W2JK again acting that control. Yeah, that sounds interesting, that stuff's going on out there. And a lot of big bucks into that space industry. Send up one rocket with a satellite on it. Material that goes into that helps. Any other comments or questions? This is W2JK. Alright, it's Gordon back, W2TTT from W2JK. Are you there? Tied up for a while. The cops are over at the neighbor's house shining a spotlight on him. There's no telling what that could be. This is close near the club. Stand by right now. And anybody hasn't checked in would like to check in. Can we take any other check ins first, over? Okay, this is W2JEK. No other check ins, no other comments or questions. And I'll just stand by here for a minute until Gordon comes back. This is at W2JEK. We'll be officially calling the TechNet for 2012. My country's mixed up here. W2JEK, we'll be just monitoring. Night. W2TTT, W2JEK.
John, I had a big raccoon climbing up my tree the other night. I wonder if this guy down the block's got a raccoon climbing up his house.
Well, they had a rabid raccoon in El Milford a couple days ago. It was got one of those reverse. But this time of night, you wouldn't expect the raccoon to be rabid because it's better out in the daytime that you got to worry about.
This guy was not rabid. He was active and normal. But big guy, so it comes out of the park, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, because
the critters in the park. Oh, even around here, I have neighboring back of me has a woodchuck living under a deck. There's rabbits running around the place, too. You know, all adaptive as human beings.
They've had coyotes in Maywood. How are you, TJC?
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of stuff around. We've had a red fox here. And we had deer. A couple deer walk up the street one day. Tony knows where I am on the Park of River, just at the top of the hill before you get up 100 yards before the border of Vanstone Park Railroad complex is.
Okay, 2AMI, WGJC. I understand you took the trip to Newington the other day. How did you like it?
I took the trip. Tony didn't, but I believe one of his relatives did. By the way, Washington Township or one of those towns around there, yesterday or today, I forget when I heard it, they were looking for a partridge that somebody had reported was on the loose. Yeah, we had a nice trip. The weather was pretty good, and the bus was gorgeous, about half full, unfortunately. Fortunately, left room for everybody. And we rode up there, and they broke us up into smaller groups and took tours of the offices and everything, which was rather mundane. But QSL sorting department was interesting. Then we took turns going over to the station, which is still in that old stone Hiram Percy Maxim building, which you see pictures of the historical ARRL. And we got a chance to operate, but unfortunately the bands didn't cooperate because everything was better than a doornail. I think out of six stations operating, they made two QSOs. But the equipment was fantastic. I was sitting there calling CQ from W1AW on CW, on 80CW, with an IC7700. That is an intimidating piece of equipment.
My nephew Tom went along with that ride and haven't had a chance to talk to him in detail about it, but I was listening here for a call from W1AW and heard nothing. And I did find the van down, even down here, was completely shut down. Very, very little activity, which unfortunately is a disappointing effect. Very good, Jim. Well, General, would you do the trip again in the near future?
Only if I could be sure that the bands would be worth the operating time. Now, the concept is you go up there and you're operating the God station, and everybody has pile-ups trying to work you and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know how you plan that ahead when you're planning a trip up there. It's nice to see what they have, but I wasn't overly impressed by the tour of all the offices. This is where we do this, and this is where we do that, and people take care of this, and those people take care of that, you know. But the station is worth seeing. It's been kept modern, but they still have some of the old broadcasting equipment for the co-practice and the bulletins and stuff. And they have a lot of museum stuff, you know, antique stuff. Definitely some of it took a lot of us back to our high school days, nostalgia, all that. Was Tom the one with the cane?
Probably is a four-pronged cane, and he has a disability with his left side is paralyzed. Said he was enjoyed it very much, but it was very tiring for him. He did more walking than he expected to do. Yeah, I liked the museum the best when I was there. I of course, many years now, man, but 10 years since I've been there. But it modern equipment of that era, you know, which has gone probably in a museum now. But I liked the museum very much. That was very interesting.
Yeah, I had never been up there in 55 years of being a ham. So when the opportunity came to do it for $21, I figured, you know, you're either going to do it now or you're never, ever going to even see the place. So from that aspect, you know, definitely glad I went. Gene W-O-2W
wing also. Yeah, Tom did surprisingly well. He did very well, actually, getting around and what he had to do. Didn't look like he was having any problems at all. So that was fantastic for his point of view. Yeah, I would say just seeing and actually sitting down and operating that super fancy equipment was worth the trip, definitely. I came home and I started pricing it out on the internet. $7,700 actually wasn't as much as I thought it was. I thought it was around $12,000, but it's only around $6,000 or $7,000. The Yaesu, which was in the position next to where I was, about $12,000, I think. I did hear he put me on 6 meters to start with because somebody had said the band was going to open or something. And I did hear a K3, pretty strong, but he was calling a DE1. So he must have had a satellite beam or a monster 6 meter beam or something. And he wasn't hearing us. That was the only, station I heard in an hour or so of sitting there tuning around.
Too bad. I'm sure you enjoyed looking at that monstrous tower that they have there, huh, with all the antennas on it, and dreaming if you could have that in your backyard.
Aha, I think they have 3 towers. One is a regular kind of tower, and the others are monsters. And I'm pretty sure there was a 40-meter beam on one of them.
Don't know. But they've only had one when I was there, and they had a satellite tower and a regular low-band tower. Satellite tower wasn't very high when I was there. Again, I'm talking at least 10 years ago.
Well, I was assured by one of the staff that pictures of all the antennas are on the web, and they're annotated with which antenna is what and stuff. So we were admonished is too strong a word, but suggested that it wasn't worth trying to take our own pictures because they were all on the web of the towers and antennas.
You take pictures of the equipment?
Oh, definitely. I only use my cell phone for snapshots, and I haven't even taken them off the phone. I should do that one of these days. I do many things with higher priorities at the moment. Anyway, yeah, when I get the pictures off, maybe I'll put them up on one of my web servers, let everybody know where they are. K2AMI from W2J.
Yeah, okay, let you go. It's almost 11. Time to get to the news. K2AMI is going to clear also and go QRT.
Okay, Tony, this is Ed Bell, W2JEK here. Please, I'm going to put one more call out for Gordon, and I'm going to pull this one. W2TTT, W2TT, W2TTT, W2JEK, over.
That's all right. Anyway.
They tend to get when you run them on high power. Before you came on, I was talking with Louie for a while, so got a bit of a workout, but I just felt it. It's like really warm.
Maybe that's why they make it so easily available, because it's power amplifiers to replace them in the rigs. Anyway, how are you copying that?
Yeah, a bit broken up here and there, but nothing I can't deal with.
Alright, just trying to climb a hill over here. Until I get to the front down the road. Better park with you up on the hill. Hills and valleys. When I'm in a valley, I'm dead. When I'm up on a hill, I'm fine. So right now, I should be a little bit, almost more quieting at this point. Copy that last transmission.
Negative. I was here on a W4 station on 80, and I was trying to hear where he was until he gave his call sign. It's the first thing on 80 I've been able to hear. Power line situation. My 2 meter mobiles that just crapped out. I can only key 2 repeaters and other stuff that's real close, so it must be still transmitting, but it must be transmitting very low, extremely low power, less than a watt maybe. And you know, I had a problem with the one before, and I took it out of the car, and then when I tested it in here, it was working. So I said, all right, maybe, you know, something was loose or. You know, so I put it back in the car, and it was working fine. I was talking with Paul, and he said, you're getting weaker and weaker, you know? So I said, all right, you know, I was driving around, maybe it was that. But then he couldn't hear me at all. And I said, okay, I was in a bad spot. I was by a train trestle. And then sure enough, today, I couldn't get anybody.
So which one are you going to put in the car now?
Well, I have another one. The one that died out was mine. I still have my dad's. He had the same radio, the HTX 212. When I bought them as a pair.
Oh, okay. Very good. So I guess you'll have to program this repeater in the other one, too.
I already did it. I just gotta change the, that one was wired up for the power supply, so I just gotta switch it over to, cigarette lighter plug.
You don't run that on high power when you're going through the cigarette lighter plug, do you?
I can if I want to. It doesn't, it dims slightly, but, it still works. When I put it on the, power supply here with the meter, it draws 7 amps.
What's high power on that radio?
I think it's 35 watts.
No, okay. You should hook up the other one in the house, make sure it's not a cigarette lighter. Maybe you blew the fuse in the cigarette lighter.
Yeah, but the radio was still lit.
Okay, so it didn't crap out completely.
It seems like the TX power just kept fading, and now it's like minuscule.
Did you try changing the power settings? I don't know how that power amplifier is set up. It might have different stages. Maybe you just blew the high power stage.
I can look into that. But I didn't have time. I was on my way to work, and so I just disconnected it, and I left it on the seat, and I took my train. So I'll have to look at it.
Yeah, just take it in the house, put it on line in the house with a meter in line, and then check all the power levels, see what you're getting out. You know, just like this radio, the high power is not working, but the medium power is, and the low power. You may have a situation like that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I have the feeling that's probably the finals on the damn thing. You know, it's been bounced around since 1995, so I got my money's worth out of it. Hate to see it go, but worst comes to worst, it'll be a parts radio for the other one. And you don't happen to know, offhand, how many amps does the 7800 draw, the AC we had?
No, I don't. I may have the manual here in the car. If I do, I'll check it out and let you know.
If I was online, I could have looked up the specs, but I was not online or anything. Just taking it easy here. And, but if it's more than 7 amps, I can't use the car. You know, use it in the car without going to the battery.
Yeah, well, if it's more than 7 amps, it's probably on high power. You can still use it. Just go with medium or low. You know, if you have an external antenna, I'm sure medium would work fine.
What I need to do is, be the easier way, is they have the faceplate holder that just hooks into, like, the air conditioned vent, and I could probably just use that, and then I could switch between cars, you know, because they both have a dual-band antenna on. Each car has a dual-band antenna, and I had the a 2-meter in each one. So now that that one blew, I could take the dual-band. No, I just never took it mobile. It's still in, you know, pristine condition.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I guess you can do that, sure. Yeah, if you're going to get a mobile radio, you know, get a car in your if you're going to get a radio in your car, eventually I would try to go to the battery. That way you can go high power. You don't have to worry about it. And when MQ, what I did is I ran a line from my battery to the trunk and then to an MFJ power strip. So each time I add a radio, all I have to do is hook it up to the power strip. You know, I don't have to go, you know, using splitters or anything. I've got a power strip that'll hold a few, connections.
Yeah, I got you. Both my cars have a hatch. And even when I had my Jeep, that was a hatch also, so I haven't had a trunk in a long time.
Yeah, it's nice. Thanks for the trunk. You'll see the mount that I made for this car from my 8-foot 2-meter mono band whip. It came in handy. For coffee, I'll see you, which is in a couple of minutes. I'll see if I have that 7800 manual here in the car. If I do, I'll look in there real quick and see what the draw is.
That'd be cool. Hey, this guy is getting stronger and stronger. He went from a 5 to a 9 on 80.
Where is he?
He's a whiskey 4. I don't know. He didn't say exactly where he is, though.
What's the frequency?
3927.
Okay. The other night I got up 20. Was really had some good strong DX signals in. This time in the morning I was really surprised.
Yesterday what I mean is today for me. And day before it was just horrible on HF, you know. And then Paul was saying it was a solar flare or something that did some wreck the bands. But even local guys were down like 2 or 3 S units. It was just like there was like no band.
Yeah, no, I'm waiting for it to turn around. Although the bands didn't sound too bad yesterday. 10's still kind of crap, guys. Tuned around real quick on 10 yesterday. When I got home, I didn't hear squat.
Yeah, 10 has been awful. I check it every day because I haven't used the ICOM on 10 yet, and I've been dying to. And there's never anything out there.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought you did use it on 10. You mean you haven't transmitted on it, but you've listened on 10?
No, there's just been nobody to talk to. yeah, I have transmitted on 10. You know, I've tested it. I had wanted to make sure all the bands worked. But I haven't gotten anybody to get a report back.
I haven't heard Jim on it in a while. I wonder what happened with him. He's close enough. Did you ever get his phone number?
Negative. We were supposed to. I should drop him an email and see what's up. Hey, maybe this weekend you get on 80. You could be my first contact on 80.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was thinking maybe even tonight after I get home and we get settled early in the evening, you know, like 6 o'clock. 80 might work well between the two of us.
It'd be cool to try it. Paul was my first on some band. I think it was 17 or 15, maybe. And but he got a first. So it'd be cool if you got one.
Really? You were able to talk to him on 17 or 15? Those are usually long-haul bands. Sure wasn't 40?
The log's in the computer, and it's nothing's on here. So, I thought it was on one of the 17 or 15. I thought it was on one of them.
Okay. You turn your computer on and off?
Roger, the laptop.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it stays on all the time. I think that's better for the power supply than turning it on and off. Well, we'd never turn it off unless we're going away for the weekend or for a week or whatever. We'll turn it off. But for the most part, it's on all the time.
Yeah, no, all the wear and tear is pretty much on the startup and shutdown. I've been telling people that for years. So, yeah, I haven't talked to anybody on 80. So, Johnny Homeboy tried a couple of bands with me, but we couldn't, I could just about hear him. But I knew, like, he was transmitting because we had arranged it, you know. Otherwise, I could just tell a little difference in the noise level. But we couldn't connect.
Yeah, the cross-polarization, because you guys are so much closer than, like, him and I, may be part of the problem. All right, give me a minute. I'm here at the mobile station. Let me grab a coffee, see if I can find that manual, and I'll be back in a minute. I'm 1MUK.
I'm going to go get myself a beverage. KB2TIA.
KB2TIA, WA2OQJ.
WAOQJ, KB2TIA. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Steve. Jim. I was listening to you guys. I couldn't break in there. I want to let you know. I was your first contact on 15.
That's right. So Paul maybe was on 40 then. You know what? I'm going to end up firing up this damn laptop to find out.
Yeah, I heard Charlie. It's funny. I had just turned it on when he was asking where I've been. I was busy studying for the extra. I couldn't stay up late anymore. By the way, I passed it Tuesday night, so I am now an extra.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's so. I heard you say that. I'm sitting here. I'm going, wait a minute. I was your first contact on 15. Matter of fact, I sent you a QSL card. Did you ever get it?
Yes, I did.
All right. Yeah, I was wondering if you got it. Good. All right. Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was thinking I was your first there. So anyway, what's been going on? How's everything going? I guess you get the antenna up. I guess you're running HF now or what?
Initially, I was making two or three contacts a day. I wasn't actively. I got the computer starting up. If you hear noises, I wasn't like on there chasing DX or anything like that. It was just kind of learning the radio a little bit. I listened to a couple of nets. I heard Over the Hill Net and